Forensic Psychology is a podcast that provides an illuminating window into the workings of the criminal mind. Now, here's your host, Dr. Carlos.
Welcome, everybody. Today we have a very special guest. I can't wait. I've been waiting a long time for this interview. He is the head of the Arcadia Cognorati. You can spell that as A-R-C-A-D-I-A-C-O-G-N-E-R-A-T-I. And what do people say about Mr. Greg Williams? Well, Greg has a multi-conflict, full-spectrum operational experience with conventional and special operations forces, law enforcement professionals, and other government agencies. The commander of the United States Central Command, General James Mattis, referred to Greg Williams as a national treasure. He is a trainer and practitioner of the art and science of human behavior profiling, which is what we're going to be talking about today, as well as the Combat Hunter program, and a lot more. So let's not waste any more time, and welcome to the show, Greg Williams. Welcome, sir.
Thank you very much. I'm very appreciative to be a guest on your show, sir.
Well, thank you very much for being here. Now, Greg, it says here you're the former director of human behavior pattern recognition and analysis, regular warfare for Orbis operations. Before we get into all that, you're also a decorated veteran urban law enforcement professional and a veteran soldier. Thank you very much for your service.
Thank you, sir.
And now, what I wanted to know is, started on all this.
Yeah, so great question right up front. So HBPRNA is a hard word to say, but once you get hooked into it, you can't think of anything else. So human behavior pattern recognition is something that every one of you lives on all their life. You recognize patterns, follow patterns. We don't want to pay additional calories, so we fall into routine. For those listeners old enough, it's like a groove on a record. What's different about that is analysis. The and A at the end of that means that what do I do with this information to turn it into intelligence and usable intelligence for an operation? So when I was a little kid, I was able to read the writing on the wall and determine if mom and dad, my dad's a former Marine, and my mom, they used to battle it out. They were the battling cops. I could tell instantly if I came into the house by the sights and the smells and my other senses that things were going well or poorly. I used to run with the bad crowd on the street, so I pattern recognized, so I figured out who was who on the street and when they would patrol and when they wouldn't to ply my trade. There was other bad guys in and around Detroit that would take what you took, so I had a pattern recognize them, their tactics, and how they operated to be able to avoid that. So what happened is over the years, being untrained in that skill, I started developing theories, and the theories turned into the six domains, heuristics and atmospherics and biometrics and proxemics. And what happened is I was getting to serve in the military and then afterwards in police work, and all the while going to school. And people would say, well, that's interesting because this theory means this. And then you run into best of breed. You run into guys like Marty Seligman, Dr. Seligman, Gary Klein, recognition priming. You run into those people and you literally sit down, listen, and take notes. And what happened is over the years, by the late 70s, I was the one that was teaching the courses. I was lucky enough to have a very successful and military career. And then when I thought I was out and my wife and I wanted to do something very different, the military had different plans. A rat beckoned and they said, hey, come build a program. So that's it. That's a thumbnail sketch.
And folks, I'm telling you right now, I mean, Greg has trained every two military force in the U.S., from the Department of Homeland Security, U.S. Border Patrol, BORTAC. We've had individuals here from BORSTAR as well, ICE, FBI, CIA. They wouldn't tell you about it anyway. Greg created Combat Profiling and the Combat Profiling Program of Instruction, the POI. Can you tell us a little bit about Combat Hunter, and does it apply to the average person?
Yeah, so Combat Hunter was never meant to apply to the average person on a day on the street. What it was is building flight for those experienced, go to a very kinetic Iraq and had to learn very few cues on the ground. So anytime that one engages in the business of having encounter human beings for the first time under novel circumstances with some unknown tangibles here, you know, kineticism, where people are actively at war, what you have to do is be able to completely realign the way you think, by drawing an environmental, a societal baseline that works for right now in the moment, and make very good choices based on an architecture. So the architecture that I had created for the Marines, the first Marines that were in the scrum in Iraq, first, do no harm, Hippocratic Oath. Second, gift of time and distance. You can exercise a little bit of tactical cunning and tactical patience by slowing down your operational tempo, and the more you learn, likely the better decisions you'll make. So basically the domains, things like the combat rule of threes, all the stuff that was in Combat Hunter was designed for kinetic combat. Now, when the general switched and the war kind of into the Afghan theater, obviously you can't use the exact same tactics because one is a much more rural environment and one is much more urban. But the great thing about psychology, sociology, the science, I don't have to go to Germany and learn the German law of mathematics or France to learn the French laws of geography or gravity. The same basic scientific rules apply. And the greatest thing, I got to tell you, Doc, the Marines and after them the soldiers and all Tier 1 operators and mission partners, they took to it like a fish to water. They got it at hello, and it was a very easy thing to expand their reticle set, to open up their eyes and teach them how to deal with people in an environment they may never experienced before.
It's an awesome program. I mean, there's so much stuff that you hit on that I wanted to discuss. We just don't have that kind of time, but you really hit a lot of areas. And it's interesting because I'm doing some research right now on criminals and how they target their victims. And you mentioned it just in the beginning of your comments here about how you look at the police, you look at their patterns, you look at individuals and their patterns and who are going to be more easier targets, I guess, for criminals. And it's fascinating that you took that route. Let me ask you this. You said there are the stains of combat profiling. For those out there who are not familiar with them, can you give us really briefly what the six domains are, and then we'll start delving into the meat of it.
Yeah, and I think that the transition is that when you have an experienced practitioner, is that you can take something like trigonometry or calculus or basic math, and then you can go out and build a shed on the weekend. So the beauty of introducing people early and often to science is they're able to take Heisenberg's uncertainty principle, incompleteness theory, second law of thermodynamics, and they're able to apply it in real time. And once you get that, you've got a little bit of magic. So the idea is that the six domains came out of 38 years of practicing it on the street in some very austere and interesting environments. So the very first one is heuristics. There's a lot of things that you see in your day-to-day life that you take for granted. Sometimes people will tell you, hey, you're in more detail from your home than you are 20 miles away. And that's because we assimilate certain prototypical and template matches when we drive around. Our brain sees pieces of an image and fills in the rest. And heuristics are also how we're fooled. If we see a certain number of cues that come together, our brain immediately assumes it's one thing. And you know what they say about assuming. The second one is kinesics, and kinesics is paralanguage or body language. And for example, anger cues are okay, but for me to know that the words coming out of my mouth are making you angry. I can de-escalate a situation early enough if I can apply an architecture to how you react to certain cues in your environment or to, for example, my mere presence. So kinesics is a great de-escalation tool. Atmospherics are how the situation evolves and creates other things to spiral out. So for example, if everybody is running away from the Piggly Wiggly, but only a few people are running in, I can assume that something bad is going there. The people running away are trying to get away from an incident, and the people running to it are either, accomplices, the news media, or, for example, first responders. So those type of atmospherics in my surrounding circumstance inform me of what I'm likely to encounter. Proxemics is how human beings deal with other people with distance. And it doesn't have to be a person. It can be people, events, or vehicles. For example, if I've got my foot on a car in the parking lot while I'm talking, I'm trying to establish ownership and show off a little bit. If it's not my car and it's your car, you're going to come out and you're going to tune me up. So those type of constants occur, and just a basic example of it, but those type of constants occur. And so if I encroach upon your personal space, or if I'm too far away, like I had a ranch in Powderhorn for 13 years, and if you're going to walk up and talk to somebody in Powderhorn, you're going to do it from 8 or 10 feet away across the hood of a pickup. If you get any closer than that, it's uncomfortable. So finally, biometrics. And when you're biometrics, there's two left. Biometrics is how humans, for example, you can tell if a person is getting angry rather than a person being embarrassed. You can tell if a person has just run a marathon or if that person is away likely from a police patrol. Pupils react different ways to different drugs and different light. So those, being on the inside track of those will really help. And then the final one, obviously, is geographics. Geographics is broken down into anchor points, habitual areas, and natural lines. And all human beings follow routines because it gets them there quicker. You take the same route to work every single day. And if something screws up your day and you got to take a different route, it takes you more mental calories, and your electric chemical neurotransmitters are pissed all day. The anchor points are where people of a certain group like to come together and hang together. For example, a police station has both habitual areas and anchor points. Habitual area is the lobby where I can go up and talk to the desk sergeant. An anchor point, if I hopped over that desk and just started rooting around, I'd probably not have a good day. So those places that are protected in some manner would be anchor points. So the understanding of those six things and being able to street them, so see them on your street, see them at your house, makes it a tool that I can use at the 7-Eleven or at the library or for my daughter or for my college-age kids or in combat. And the simplicity is they're all founded in science, and every one of the programs I developed has been tested and vetted, and numbers of papers written about them. So we're posers.
Now, that's the great thing. A lot of it is science-based. And, folks, this is really just the tip of the iceberg that he rattled off here in about 5 minutes or less, and which is amazing to do because there's so much content. And one of the great things, too, Greg, that I found out, especially when it comes to proxemics and kinesics, is you guys also looked a lot at culture differences, because that does make a difference.
Yeah.
People in Middle Eastern countries will speak much closer to each other. The distance is much smaller compared to other countries. Can you share some of that?
Yeah, so what most people get wrong is they stress so much about culture. First of all, when we talk about building a profile is like your computer. You got a computer profile. You have a profile at Macy's or at Sears, how you buy your clothes. And when they send an advertisement, they're going to follow that profile. It's not about the color of your skin. It's not about who you pray to or choose not to pray to. It's not about the language that you speak, because there's a universal language of humans. So culture is merely science. And the beauty of culture is you can catch on to that very quickly when you're immersed in that culture. When people go to foreign places and they don't know what an ablution is, all they have to do is walk in, and when they see people washing their hands and feet, they go, oh, okay, I got that. When people notice lines, they're going to say, I wonder what line's for, and then they're going to stand in it and they'll get their food. Those type of things are easily assimilated. What you want to make sure you do is you want to take the big muscle movements, the big picture of all cultures, and say, okay, these are likely normal. So we call those the MLCO, the most likely courses of action. And then these few that I don't understand, I've got to determine if they're life-critical, if they're ego-driven, or if they're dangerous. And I would put those in the pot of MDCO, the most dangerous courses of attitude. Of action, rather. And so the quicker that you understand those knowledge, skills, aptitudes, abilities, and attitudes, the quicker you'll assimilate with somebody else. But we don't do that. What we do is our flight's delayed, so we go up to the counter person and we explode on them. And say, why can't you do this, and why do we do that? I'm all about de-escalation. I'm about taking that tactical pause, taking a tactical knee, evaluating the situation and determining what likely outcomes would come from explanatory storylines. And you can see of those in your head every day. You get much quicker and better at it the more you use it. And you can de-escalate almost any situation and get what it is you want, even if you don't speak the language, even if it's the first time that you've been in Compton or Canada. And that's you to program, not just Combat Hunter, but post-Combat Hunter as well.
One of the things that interests me, too, since I'm a forensic psych professor, is how much you actually looked at, I wouldn't say the unconscious, but I guess that's part of it, your past experiences and how much that influences what you reference in your sense-making, I guess the process of situational awareness. And psychologically, you referred to, if I'm correct, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems like a lot of our own past experiences seem to create things that we use to make sense out of our environment. Am I saying that right?
Oh, yeah, you nailed it. So let's talk Gestalt. You know, Gestalt is known for the three-legged chair. Your brain paints in the fourth leg of the chair, and then all of a sudden what you've done is you've understood the scientific principle of confirmation bias and reintegration. Now, those are two things they didn't teach in high school, and if you did college, like for heuristics, you could spend 35 years just studying heuristics. Well, you don't have that kind of time always with a citizen or with a person that wants to go to church or school or a person that's in combat. So what you do is you have to storytell. And storytelling is taking something from your own life that's common enough that everybody can associate to it or at least contact with it. And then you build the story much like I did about the chair, and you do it fast and you make sure that the brain loves it. You make it sticky. If you're laboriously telling a story and breaking down each part, and I have to remember three parts of this and five parts of that and have a limited chart on it, I'm probably not going to remember it when the chips fall and the crap hits the fan. So the idea is you have to personalize the information in a context where the person will see the relevance simply. You had a guest on that talked about context and relevance, and I say they missed the point, but the idea is that every novel situation you come into, your brain fights to make order out of chaos. So what we do is we give you the template, the architecture, with which to build your response to that before it happens, well left of bang.
Yeah, that's a great thing, because being left of bang is where you want to be. Let me ask you this. So what are some of the things, I know when you talk about baseline, that seems to be one of the first crucial elements in the foundation of the program. Tell us a little bit about baseline, above the baseline, below the baseline, which I love, because a lot of people miss that below one.
Yep. So a simple thing like this. I've been at thousands of homicide scenes. I've had to attend unattended deaths. I've had to go to school shootings. I've had to interview the criminal and the victims. And what you learn over 35, 38 years of doing that is everything follows specific patterns. There are patterns of behavior, for example, that are pre-suicidal in nature that could be trigger moments that you could prevent from happening. Domestic violence. For example, why would a domestic violence go to work and happen in a workplace and turn into workplace violence? Because I want to send a message. My rage is so bad that I'm unsettled and I have to come and tune you up at work. All your coworkers see that I'm in charge. It's a control thing. Once you start understanding how that works, then you can build a baseline. So, for example, every single time that I've interviewed the victims of a school shooting, or every single time that I've, an armed homie, they say, well, I knew something was wrong because this always happens at this time and it didn't. I knew something was wrong because when Jim or Jane came to work, they had shaved their head and painted a orange crucifix on their chest or whatever it is, and I'm obviously being dramatic just to draw a point that the baseline was violated. Any single time that you see something in your baseline that wasn't there yesterday, wasn't there a few minutes ago, and doesn't seem like it fits, it's going to stick out to your brain like a neon glow stick, and you have to attend to it. Our attention needs to go. If you're looking around and you go, wow, something's missing today that I've seen every other day, again, you need to start. You can't be hyper-vigilant. You can't be hyper-focused. But those are the things that you want to pick out. And I'll give you a great one that you can do this coming weekend. I hope you have a great week at work. Go see a place that's open Monday through Friday, 9 to 5. Go to that same place on the weekend, and you'll notice that traffic flows are different. Pendleton, for example, go to Camp Pendleton or go up the Stumps and just drive around the gate on a holiday. That place is like a apocalypse. But other days, there's lines that are going around the building. That's how you establish baselines for normalcy. And I mean scientific normalcy, clinical normalcy, not saying some people are normal and they're not. I don't have to deep dive that much. I just have to see what's normal for a situation, what one should expect. And if it's missing or if there's something there that doesn't fit, that's probably where my danger is going to start.
That's awesome. Awesome stuff. I wanted to cover, too, a little bit in our last few minutes. Well, we got about seven more minutes to go, but we got tricks. This is another one. I can't believe how much in detail you guys go to here, but you cover histamines, you cover adrenaline, you talk about drugs, you talk a little bit about alcohol that could affect your pupil dilation and sweating, whatnot. How deep do you guys get into when it comes to biometrics?
Here's the thing. A lot of people don't understand that the length of the course is commensurate with how good you want to be Even the instructors I trained, a litany of people that have been on your show or that you know or that we've run into over the years, those people go through 22-day courses, and then the next year they have to go with a trained, experienced senior instructor. That's because this is hard. This isn't something that you can get in an hour at the Satellite Hilton Hotel. You've got to study it. You've got to look. What did it take you to read Kodiak? A couple of weeks, right? So, just to take those principles, if you want to be good at them, you have to apply them. Now, that doesn't mean that you can't learn the baseline thing we just talked about and be safer today. Right now, your listeners are going to be safer because of that. The idea is that it takes time, and biometrics is a perfect example. There's a lot of stuff that I don't need, but if I can tell the difference between somebody being uncomfortable and somebody being angry, if I can tell that the person is afraid rather than that person is surprised by the information that I'm letting out. Imagine how much more rich and fertile that conversation can be. Or let's say I'm an HR person and I'm going to do an interview. If I can understand what's going on likely in the person across from me, then I can use a psychological de-escalation or even a manipulation to get somebody to open up and talk to me that maybe wouldn't. And you know, that's where transparency comes from, and that's how you build trust with people, and that's how you de-escalate to it. If you think you're going to have a rational discussion with someone that's, messed out of their gourd and you're not reading the right signals, then that can waste calories and get people injured that don't need to be injured. And the great thing about the program, too, is while you're learning about how to read humans and read their environment, you're learning how to read yourself. So you can be the best you that you can be. Your human performance is based on your human behavior and how you interact with humans. So you can be stronger and smarter and faster and harder to kill.
Great. Great stuff. Let me ask you this. I'm going to throw a little curveball at you for a second here and see what you think about this. In regards to media, in regards to news, in regards to movies, in regards to TV, do those alter our perceptions? In other words, they create experiences for us and how we perceive certain elements. Do you think that can distort our reality to a degree that it can hinder our situational awareness, that we're either hypervigilant or not vigilant enough or whatnot?
Now obviously you can see what your dissertation was in and why you're such a doctor in great demand, sir, because you're reading it again. You're reading it right on the wall. The problem is that we tend to scan headlines and not deep dive. And the news media knows that, just like advertisers. So easy nowadays, and it always has been around, but it's easy nowadays to fall into the clickbait or yellow journalistic trap and read something that's principally wrong. But the problem is that once you've read it, you've already made a decision on it. But seeing all these months of COVID, before the civil disobedience that's going on now and the protests, all of the COVID stuff, man, try to find a good outcome. Try to find something that was positive. And after a while, that takes a psychological toll. And so I tell people that, listen, there are subject matter experts out there. Find them. There's great training out there. Our training is expensive, but it's the best of breed because I wrote the programs. So you can spend a couple of bucks and go to a weekend training, or you can get some real training. And I don't want to do a sales pitch. Any author that writes a good book that you can look back and see where they got the information and what their bona fides are, that's what I would believe. So, yeah, you're right. Advertising in the news media is turned on to sell. And the same thing with political advertising else. Be very skeptical. Be very wary. I tell people on our podcast, the Left to Greg podcast, all the time, do your homework. And that's all I would tell everybody. Take a deep breath. Take a look around. Do your homework. And guess what? The world is an amazing, wonderful place.
That's a great, great advice. And you know what, folks? If you think that politicians or the media don't hire people who understand the stuff that Greg does, that I do, or body language or whatnot, or they do. They do, and they try to use it to manipulate and control, but whatever. That's another topic for another year. Let me ask you this, Greg, before we get ready to wrap up. Tell us a little bit about the programs you offer. How long are they? Who are they designed for and whatnot?
Yeah. So here's the thing. Contact ArcadiaCognorati.com. A lot of information on the website, so we're not wasting each other's time. Brian Marin, a decorated former veteran Marine from Scout Sniper Community, is the VP of Operations. He'll call you back, and we purpose-build the training to your needs. So we've got seven Green Berets that need to figure out how to take over a corporate business and thrive, or if you have four Boy Scouts that want to improve how they handle the upcoming garage sale. It doesn't matter what it is. We improve human performance through is of human behavior. So we deal with LE, we deal with private businesses, first responders, and we're still very much involved with the military and 53 countries so far. So it doesn't matter what your budget is. It doesn't matter where you're located. Give us a call. We'll tell you what we can do.
Actually, that reminds me, too. I want to ask you one more question in regards to traveling. I'm assuming all of this stuff can actually be applied if you travel to a foreign country and you're not really familiar with it. What advice would you give somebody traveling somewhere else?
I'll answer it as quickly as I can. We had a client recently from Texas that was taking their family to a foreign country. And the idea was what we did is we worked with them to build their itinerary to make sure that they were going to have an amazing time and see some wonderful stuff. And we actually coordinated with some folks on the ground that we work with to ensure that when they got there and when they flew out, everybody was healthy, happy, safe, and took a bunch of great photos. That's the first thing. Invest a couple of bucks to figure out, do your homework, figure out what's going on. You can read the U.S. State Department's website. You don't have to hire somebody like me if you don't want to. And do the due diligence before you fly. Problems don't get easier at 30 feet. So extend that to what will I do on an aircraft if this happens? What will I do at the airport if this happens? And rehearse it with your family. For the love of God, everybody that listens to your broadcast has done fire drill before in their life. It's just protracting that out to every aspect of their life. Do it at home. Do a drill if a person pulls up in the parking lot. Do a drill if you're getting scammed when you're at the library. And if you can't handle it yourself or you don't have family members that are experts, hire a company like ours. It's money well worth it.
Absolutely. I know we've had some experts who live down in Mexico, and you know it's a very different environment. And I highly recommend getting some kind of training like this, folks. Greg, we thank you so much for being here.
Now, listen, I'm a huge fan of the show, longtime fan of the show. Please use me in any commercial endorsements because I think people in 30, 35 minutes to an hour can learn a tremendous amount on your show.
Oh, thank you so much. And by the way, folks, you can add Arcadia Cognorati. That's Arcadia Cognorati. ArcadiaCognorati.com. Highly recommend going there. Check them out also on the podcast. You can find them over there. You can look at that on the website, and you can find the podcast on YouTube. Really fascinating stuff. Again, if you want to support our podcast, make sure to share and subscribe. We thank everyone for listening. We'll catch you all next time.